You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Scotty, good to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing right now. Okay. You recently got out of coaching.
Right.
Real estate work, real estate.
So I'll give you a little history. So my daughter plays volleyball here at the U of A. And so my wife and I kind of made a promise to ourselves and to her that we wanted to try to do what I just talked about, which is support our daughter. You know, we've done a lot for a lot of other student athletes, a lot of family members, and so we decided to be a little bit selfish and kind of use our time to support our own. And so we've been on a tour of volleyball for the last 2 years since she's come back here. We haven't missed a game, and so back when I played, I thought I was tired, but I'm way more tired, you know, going and supporting. And so we've been doing that, but real estate is something I've done since 2001. Obviously, I've had the opportunity to coach and teach and do a lot of other things, but it's something I've always gravitated to, mainly because of I'm a big construction guy. You know, I like to see the pieces come together. I like to see the people that are doing the work. Not that I can do the work, but I can support the work and make sure that it gets done. And so that teamwork aspect is something I've always gravitated to, and so I've been doing it since about 2001.
You've still got, you mentioned Romani playing volleyball for the Razorbacks. Your son, Scotty Jr., I think he's working in compliance up here too.
He is. And so that's a whole nother dynamic. And so my son is 31. He works at the U of A. He works in compliance. He was a walk-on football player there, which in our family, nobody played football, just like nobody played volleyball. You know, everybody was basketball or baseball. And so for our kids, we've been very fortunate to be able to support them in a sport that I can't coach. My wife, Dr. Zena Thurman back there, she can't coach, although she thinks she's a volleyball coach. And so we're kind of, you know, forced to support and be there for support. And I'll never forget, we were on the road this year, and we were in Colorado, and, you know, we lost a big match. And, you know, as parents, you guys are competitive. As supporters, you're competitive. And when you lose, you know, everybody's in the dumps. And so, you know, we go back to the hotel, and there was a lady there. She was waiting on us, and she said, "Did you guys win?" And I'm like, "No, we lost." And she was like, "Did you create any memories?" And so that kind of stuck with me. And so as a competitor, yeah, I'm creating memories. I like to be on the winning side of those memories. But you know, it's been an enjoyable ride so far.
You think coaching might be in your future again at some point in time?
Possibly. I've got a grandson who's about to be 10, so maybe. But I don't know. I mean, I've kind of been one of those people where, you know, the old saying, you know, if you want God to laugh, tell him your plans. Mm-hmm. And so I've never planned to do half the things that I've done in life. Like, I didn't make plans to attend the University of Arkansas. I didn't make plans to marry my lovely wife. Those things just kind of happened and presented themselves. And as you can see, I took advantage of a great opportunity.
So I want to talk to you about your career here in a minute. I want to talk to you a little bit about this year's team, though. You've watched them, I'm sure, most of their games. What are your thoughts about this year's squad?
I like our team. I've been very excited about what I've seen so far. I like the way they share the basketball. They appear like they like one another. They're enjoying playing together. I'm anxious to see the big kids get a little bit better and get a little bit more seasoned, because I think for us to go deep in the tournament, that's going to be required. But I do like the energy that they play with. I love Billy Richmond and the way he attacks the basket. But I'm a big Malik Thomas guy because he hunts for those shots. And, you know, I love that.
I wanted to ask you about Billy Richmond, because there's kind of this popular thought out there. A player comp for him that I've heard a number of times is Darryl Hawkins. Yeah. And you played with Darryl Hawkins. Do you see that?
I do, because they play with reckless abandon. You know, they don't really get caught up in getting fouled or creating fouls. Now, I would like to see him calm down with the technicals. but his energy and effort, I think, is something that's infectious for that team. And you can just see when he goes into the game, their confidence level goes up. Their pace picks up, and I just think he brings a tremendous joy to just the fans watching him. Just that energy is contagious.
There have been a few of technical fouls this year, some instances where there's been some pushing and shoving, maybe not even a foul's called. How do you walk the line and balance between wanting to have an edge and not taking any crap from your opponent, but also not crossing that line and potentially hurting your team?
Well, I mean, as players, you can't get technical fouls. That's just a no-no. That's for the coach. You know, the coach gets the text. And so I just think, you know, guys get caught up in the heat of the moment. How do you walk the line? I think you just play the game. You know, I mean, obviously, you're going to talk and there's going to be some joy, but I think you got to keep it between the lines and above board and focus on the game.
Did you ever get a technical?
I did. accidentally.
Uh-huh.
And so the year we won the championship, we were playing in Oklahoma City. We were playing Georgetown. Mm-hmm. And so a fight breaks out at half court. And I was on the bench at the time, and I took a step onto the floor, and the referee was standing on the baseline. And so he just came and he said, "You're out of here." And I'm like, "I didn't even do anything." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Well, the rule is a player can't come on the court." Now, keep in mind, Georgetown had about five players at half court, and they only suspended one of those guys and me, and the two guys that actually fought got to continue to play. So that was my only take.
I thought about it. It's funny you say that because I actually thought about that a few weeks ago. Remember DJ Wagner got thrown out in a game. I think it was against Winthrop. It was right there at the end. And it was kind of the same thing. He dipped his toe in the water.
Right.
And I think it was because he saw one of his teammates running out, and he kind of was maybe had that initial urge to go back and catch him and bring him back. But that'd be something I feel like there's obeying the letter of the law, and then there's also interpreting things, and I feel like that's something that could be changed and maybe better officiated.
Well, I wish it would have been changed at that time because it forced me to watch the rest of the game in the locker room eating nachos.
Did you ever get a tech as a coach?
Yes.
A lot?
As a high school coach, yeah. I think my first year high school coach, I think I had three, and then it got better. I had two.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had one, and in my last year coaching, I had none. So I was pretty proud of that.
You ever getting a mindset where you're like, I know I'm going to get one right here, and I'm going to say something that let's see if this triggers it.
Well, depending on the moment in the game, depending on what's taking place, obviously score, time, you know, sometimes you want one.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful with how you go about it because some referees are really quick to just eject you like back to back texts. So I've never been like ejected from the game, but I have had my share of technical fouls.
This last game against Texas Tech, did you watch it?
I did.
Your thoughts on that game? Because I thought that was as exciting a game as I've seen in a long time.
Me too. I mean, it didn't look that good for us early on in the game, but I think, you know, our guys got it together. Trevor Mazzillo played, you know, out of his mind. I wouldn't say out of his mind. I think that's what his talent level calls for. I think he needs to give us that every night, and if he can do that on a night-in, night-out basis, we're going to be – pretty hard to beat, but I mean, the A-Cup kid is the engine that makes us go, and so as long as he's playing at a high level, I think we're going to be fine.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
It's such a different time now than whenever you were a player, but are you able to draw? It feels to me like maybe the excitement level about basketball right now is on par with what it was mid-90s. Are you able to draw any comparisons between when you played and what we're seeing right now, or are the times just too different in terms of the players and everything that goes into it?
I mean, you draw comparisons. I mean, you always see guys, you compare them to guys that you played with or guys you played against. I agree with you on the level of excitement. I think it definitely at an all-time high. For me, as a former player, my excitement is always there. You know, it doesn't really matter for who's on the team, what year, who's the coach. My expectations every year for us to be Elite Eight Final Four, regardless of whether that's Coach Mike Anderson, whether that's Coach Eric Musselman, whether that's John Calipari. I know that can somewhat be unfair, but when I came here, I came behind a group that was in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And so my expectations were to try to continue to uphold that. And so since we were able to uphold that, why would I lower my expectations? And so I know that can be a little tough on young people, you know, because it's like, dang, they expect us to make the Final Four. Well, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. They expect you to make the Final Four. And so that's what you come here for. And I mean, I know we're not, quote unquote, a blue blood program, but I mean, I'm from Louisiana. I never had any blue blood. All my blood's been red.
Mm-hmm. What do you see from this year's team? And I think that with the coaches and the players, too, I think their expectation is to make the Final Four. I don't think they're coming here and you know, stepping into the environment that's been created if they don't have those type of expectations for themselves. What do you see about this year's team that makes you think that they could make a run? And what do you see about them right now where they need to grow over the next few months in order to be able to get there?
I think I see a little bit more depth, like maybe 1 through 9. You know, I think there could have probably been a drop-off at 8, 9, but I don't think you really get much drop-off. I am a little concerned with maybe who handles the ball, provided A-Cuff's not in the game. should be DJ Wagner, who I think is very capable, but it's kind of been up and down year so far for him. But I would like to see Pringle and Ewan really step their game up, because to me, this is just my opinion, you can't be a fifth-year guy and be the first to hit the floor. You know, fifth-year guys are the elder statesmen. Mm-hmm. You know, a freshman, yeah, maybe he hits the floor. But, I mean, guys going to the basket, getting touched, and, I mean, you look at Pringle and you see his body type, who's really knocking him to the ground? So I think some of these guys get caught up, young guys watching NBA instead of watching college. You know, guys go to the NBA, they get touched on the hand. It's, oh, they turn at the referee. The play's live. They're still playing. Mm-hmm. And so I just think guys need to stay away from moving on and having their feet where they are.
I would ask you about whenever you were here coaching. And, I mean, you wore a lot of hats whenever you were here. I think you came here, was a director of student athlete development. Yes. For John Pelfrey for his last year. And then Mike Anderson kept you on. You were here for all of those years. First in a support staff role, then on court coaching. Right. You even were the radio announcer for yeah. a couple of years. I don't know if people remember that. What do you remember about those years, though, and what are some of the memories that you have?
Well, my first memory, my first day on the job, well, I won't say my first day on the job, my first game, mm-hmm. I walk in the parking lot, and Mr. Mike Irwin meets me in the parking lot, and his first words to me were, "Hey, Scotty, we got to get this thing going." I'm like, wait a minute, I just got here.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I at least get in the gym, you know? And so I remember we were playing an exhibition game that night, and that was the first time I came, and I didn't really see many fans. And then we got inside the gym, and I still didn't see many fans. And so that was a big shocker for me. It was like, hey, what's going on? Because my expectations was that it was going to always be filled up. Mm-hmm. We were always going to be highly rated. And so that was kind of a tough deal for me. But having said that, you know, I was able to be in those positions because of the people who allowed me to. You know, Coach mm-hmm. Pelfrey was really good to me. Coach Anderson was. And so, you know, I just tried to do whatever I could for the program because my focus was just helping those guys and us be the best we could be, whether that was off the court, on the court. I really didn't care about it. And then I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to coach. And it's kind of like, dang, you know, I remember when I played, and now here I am getting a chance to coach where I played. So it was kind of surreal.
When you were playing, I'm going to talk about the crowd for a second, because when you were playing, it didn't matter if you were playing Delaware State or Centenary or Northwestern State or whoever. I mean, that place was packed.
Right.
And now, you know, it'll get full for Louisville last couple of weeks. But for the most part, and TV doesn't help this any with the way that, number one, the fact that everything's on TV. Number two, the times that they set for tip-offs. You just don't see the in-person support like you used to see on a night-in and night-out basis. How does that change?
I don't know. I mean, I think when you're scheduling 8 o'clock games on a Tuesday night and parents have young children, I mean, mm-hmm. they're gonna stay at home if they can watch it on TV. I don't know how you incentivize fans to come to the game, but I see someone posting on Twitter almost every game, like, give your tickets away. You know, we should have bodies in the stands. But I think at Arkansas, to me, it's just me, I think the fans should continue to pour in. I mean, you can't have expectations of wanting to be an elite level team and you're at home every game. You know, mm-hmm. it's okay to be at home, maybe a game, and you're giving your tickets away, but you shouldn't have your tickets in your pocket and not be at the game. I think that should be a no-no.
Brad Dunn asked me to ask you, have you ever coached any defense?
I have.
Okay.
I was pretty good at it as well.
Did you like coaching offense better?
I just like coaching the game. I mean, yeah. I didn't really identify with one side of the ball. Coach Dunn gives me a lot of flack saying I didn't play defense. But if you go look at my stats on my team, I was always number two in assists, and I was always number one or two in steals. Mm. So, I mean, I must have did something. And that's the way we played. Plus, mm-hmm. we kept up with deflections. Mm-hmm. I was always one of the tops in deflections. He won't admit that, though.
So I had an encounter about 3 months ago. Dwight Stewart was inducted into the UA Sports Hall of Honor. You came up here yep. that day. But we had him over at our studio for a podcast. And I asked Dwight if he could come by, and he said, yes, he can. They had trouble finding their parking spot. So I go out there, and I start looking for him, and I see in this little car climb out Dwight Stewart, Clint McDaniel, Alex Dillard, Corey Beck, and two women, I think spouses. But it was quite the sight to see all of them get out there. But one of the takeaways that I had as I was watching that was, like that brotherhood that you guys had was real. And they were talking about they were going to meet up with you, and Corliss was in town, and several others, and you guys were going to get together. And I see all these, you know, pictures from different times that you get together over at Coach Richardson's ranch. It's amazing to me to see that all these years later, that that's still very real with that group of players.
Oh, it's definitely real. I mean, that's what made us the team that we were. You know, we were not only tight on the floor, but we were tight off the floor. You know, I talk about that 1-9, we were 1-12. Mm. And it didn't matter, like, if a guy went in the game, no one was, like, hoping he didn't play well so you could get back in. Mm-hmm. And I think now that's kind of the difference. Everybody wants to play, and it's fine. You should want to play, but you also have to learn to support other people and wait on your turn. That was the biggest thing for me coming from high school. In high school, I played the whole game. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter if I was tired. Didn't matter if I was in foul trouble. The coach was generally going to leave me out there. When I got to college, you realize Coach Rich is going to give you 4 or 5 minutes, and you better show him what he wants to see, or you're coming to sit. It doesn't matter if you're Corliss, Scotty, Darnell Robinson. It didn't matter. And so for us, sometimes I think our unity came from those challenges that Coach put us under, but then also it wasn't as much to do here back then, you know. I mean, there was no, I don't want to say it, but, you know, nobody's hanging out on Dixon Street. When we were in school, we had to go hang out at the apartment or hang out at the dorm, play cards, and so you were forced to be closer.
I always thought that team, you know, whenever you hear people talk about the greatest college basketball teams, I never hear 94 Arkansas mentioned. But I thought that was a really good team, and I think one of the reasons I think that it was so good was the depth that you guys had. I've heard people say, and I don't necessarily disagree, that if you took yourself and Corliss and Corey and Clint and Dwight off that team, that's still a Sweet 16 team. And those were the players who were coming off the bench. What do you think about the depth and just what made that team special?
Well, I think everybody could dribble, pass, and shoot. And I think Coach and the staff, Coach Dunn, and Coach Anderson did a great job of identifying pieces that fit. I mean, obviously the team before us, you know, my teammates will probably get on me for saying this, but they did have more talent. They were more talented. I mean, you know, they jumped off the page, Big Oliver Miller, Todd Day. They jumped off the page. Corliss jumped off the page. None of us, the rest of the guys really jumped off the page. But we knew how to play. We knew how to pass. We could dribble. And we could take coaching, which playing for Coach Richardson, you had to be able to take because he was going to be tough on you. Mm-hmm. And so there were some days where you might not like Coach. And so then you're forced to like this guy, Coach Dunn. You know, you may not like Coach Dunn that day. Then you're forced to like Coach Anderson. But it was always a good cop, bad cop type of deal. And for us, we would like feel like we were going in games sometimes playing against Coach Richardson even, if that makes sense. Mm. Because it's like, I've got to prove to him what he said I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. He said I couldn't rebound. I'm going to go get 8 today just to show it. And so those are the things I think that motivated us, that made us different. And that's why our depth really showed, because guys were out to prove something.
How'd you get recruited here? What was that story?
Oh, man. So I had top 5. Originally, I had a top 10, and my dad –
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Who worked 7 days on, 7 days off, he would miss, like back then, in-home visits were really, really big. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was like, hey, if the head coach doesn't come, they're not really serious about you. And so when I got to my 10, he was like, you're not going to visit 10 schools, you only get 5 visits, so why are we wasting these people's time? So when I had my 10, I was doing my in-homes, and Wimp Sanderson, who was at Alabama, was at the time, he was supposed to be first up, and they stood me up, they didn't even show. And my mom had cooked, and that's what she did for every staff that came in. Mm-hmm. She cooked, and I think Coach might have ate us out of house and home once or twice. And so that knocked them off the list. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, like, okay, how far is this really from home? Are my parents going to be able to see me play? And so that came into play. And then I started thinking about relationships. Who did I know? And so the first person I thought of was Corliss, because we had met playing 16 on the AAU basketball. And so we maintained a relationship and got to 5 pretty quickly. I took my visit to Pittsburgh, and I literally froze to death. And I was like, man, on the visit, like, I'm not coming here. This And so then I take my visit to OU, and I had my 2 hosts, which they had one host host me one day, and one was going to host me the next day. They get arrested. So I'm like, I'm not coming here. And so then I take a visit to Arkansas, and the big deal, because everybody at the time was negatively recruiting to Arkansas, saying it's too far from home. You got to go through all these hills to get there. It's going to be 7 hours when it was really 5.5. Mm-hmm. And so all that stuff was kind of, you know, in my mind. And then my dad was like, hey, how about this? How about you take a visit to Arkansas? No football game. That way you won't get mixed views. You'll see what it's like, provided when there's no games going on, and if you can really live in Fayetteville. And so I was like, okay. So I take my visit. The football game at that time was in Little Rock. They were playing Miami. Mm. And so I won't even talk about that game. But I was here, and I'm like, okay, this is pretty cool. I saw the fans. I'm like, okay. They showed me around, and then I go home. I get home, and a couple of days go by, and back then, for you young guys, you probably get a kick out of this. You know, obviously nobody had cell phones, but I had my own room phone in my bedroom. But the only people that called it back then was, like, my high school girlfriend. Don't worry about that, sweetie. And so the phone rings, and I answer, and it's Coach Ritz. And I'm like, who gave him this number? You know, because he would always call on the main line. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the phone, and he starts asking me, so, son, what are we waiting on? Like, what's going on? You ready to commit? And I'm like, Coach, man, like, give me a couple of days. He said, so tell me who you're considering. And I said, Pittsburgh. He said, Pittsburgh? He said, you want to go walk the ball up the court? And so I'm like, well, they do kind of walk the ball up the court. And he says, who else? I said, Oklahoma. He said, Billy Tubbs? He said, oh, he just wants to play like me. So I'm like, okay, they do kind of play like you. So then he said, who else are you considering besides us? I said, well, I've got to visit to Texas, and I couldn't get Texas out quick enough. He was like, Tommy Penders? He was like, they haven't beat us in anything. I'm like, okay. So he was like, who else? And I said, Stanford. He said, son, your parents will never get to see you play. You're going to be playing at midnight, and then they got to go so far to get there. So I was like, all right, Coach, I'm coming to Arkansas. That's really how it happened.
That's amazing. Did you commit first, or did Corliss commit first?
Well, we both signed during the same either day or week, but we had talked on the phone, and I knew at the time he was considering, like, Indiana, Georgetown, and Arkansas. And so when I called him, I was like, hey, what are you thinking about doing? And he was like, well, I'm thinking about going to Arkansas, but I don't know. What about you? And I was like, well, if you're going to Arkansas, I'm going to Arkansas. And he was like, okay, let's do it. Mm. And so the rest was kind of history.
That's amazing. I mean, because you two have been – I didn't realize that you guys played together even before you got to Arkansas.
Not together, guess one another.
But knew each other during those – I mean, because it's you've kind of been tied at the hip in a lot of ways. And when somebody thinks about Scotty, they think about Corliss or vice versa for all these years.
Yeah, we've been close a long time, man. I mean, I was 17, he was 18. Mm. And he actually came up and enrolled in summer school. And so he was already here, living on campus, going to classes. And I was in Louisiana at the time, mm-hmm. because my graduation was a little bit later than his. I graduated on May 18th. And I think summer school had already started, something like that. And so I never forget, I went to the park, because, you know, back then, kids, we played outside a lot. And so I came back from the park. I was soaking wet. And my dad sitting on the couch, he's like, where you been? I was like, oh, I was in the park playing ball. He's like, park? He's like, oh, no, it's over for the park. He said, I tell you what, we need to call up there and see if they got a job for you. I know school's already started. Maybe you can get a summer job. Mm-hmm. Called up. They got me a summer job. Found a little one-bedroom apartment. And Corliss moved out of the dorm with me into the one-bedroom apartment. Mm. Now, we did have two beds, so don't you guys? But... and that's how it started.
Okay, so we can't talk to Scotty without talking about Duke and the game. And it's been 31 years since this happened. And I bet you probably get asked about this weekly, daily?
Daily.
Daily?
Yeah, daily.
Well, so what? You're 19, 20 years old, somewhere in there when you 19. Get that shot, 19 yeah. years old. And that's the moment that you are remembered for best for your entire life.
Right.
I wonder, how do you process that at such a young age? And have you, you and I have had conversations about this too before, how, you know, kind of thankful you are that you stay at the forefront of everybody's minds.
Right.
But has how you think about that shot, has it evolved over the years?
Yeah, it kind of changes. I mean, the older you get, I'm 51 now, so it, you know, it has changed over the years. Like, I think when I first made the shot, I don't know if I really enjoyed it as much as I probably should have, because I think we were in the mindset of this is what we're supposed to do. We're trying to prove to everybody how good we are, and so you got consumed with that. And then I looked and I see Corliss crying and jumping up, and I'm like, wait a minute, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I not like that? And so we got in the locker room, and I got more excited at, you know, as it was over, and then President Clinton came in, and it was like, oh, man, we really did win it, and guys started really celebrating. And then fast forward, you know, as my son got older, because my daughter obviously wasn't, you know, she wasn't born at that time, and we would go places, and people would, you know, stop me and tell me these stories about where they were, and I was like, dang, like, you had that type of effect on people. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about, like, my dad, when he would make me fold up socks and we'd shoot them in the clothes basket and we'd be emulating everybody, Wayman Tisdale, Dallas Comegys, and then all of a sudden you get put in that situation where you're the guy taking a real shot, there's no more sock. And then to actually have it happen, it's kind of like I'm living out a childhood dream that, you know, that I couldn't have planned. It just kind of happened that way.
That game, I can still remember almost play-by-play of it, and I remember how back and forth it was in the first half, and then Duke gets up big in the second half, you guys come back, and then the last 2 or 3 minutes are just really great basketball. Are you able to remember specifics, though, of the game? Or so, what are some of the specifics that you remember?
Well, I remember them going up 10, and Coach Richardson calling a timeout, and, you know, he would often do – you know, he would ask us what we wanted to play, what defense we wanted to play. And I remember Corey was like, let's pick him up. Because we had kind of been – people don't realize, if you go back and look at that run we were on, we didn't press as much. We pressed, but we would mix it up. We'd be in a half-court zone. We'd be in half-court man-to-man. We may still be trapping, but it just may not be full court. And Corey was like, let's pick him up. And I'm thinking, man, 10 points. I think it's like 3.5. Like, we got to go on a run quick. And we did. And once we went on the run, we just kind of looked at their faces, and you can just see they were like, man, these dudes won't go away. And so I remember Grant Hill kind of walking by Corliss and was like, man, do y'all get tired? And for us, whenever we played teams that would even mention being tired or mention fatigue, it was almost like you got an extra burst of energy because that's how we practice. And even though we thought Coach was crazy the way he ran us, it was always funny when you got into a game and you realized, like, these guys really are not as in good a shape as we are. And so that was kind of our advantage, and I remember that. And then I remember when we came out of the timeout to play, the shot that I actually made, the ball was supposed to be going in the Corliss, but he had, I think, Cherokee Parks behind him and Grant Hill in front of him. And so Corey couldn't throw it in. And so when I ran baseline, Antonio Lane kind of turned his head and he lost me for a second. And that's when I sprinted out and was able to make the shot.
Everybody remembers that shot, but I think I counted you had 5 game-winning shots in your career, either in the last minute or right there around the last minute. How are you prepared? What makes a player prepared to be able to do that over and over consistently and make them?
Well, I'll tell you what's crazy about that is so, like, growing up in Louisiana, I had so many coaches that kind of put me in that situation when I was younger, like even from, like, church league basketball. From Mrs. Glenda Minor, who picked us up on the bus every day to go to practice, Coach Summerlin, my middle school coach. And then when I got to high school, I had a high school coach, Coach Norm Piku, and Coach Gary Mitchell, that, like, they really worked with me. And they really, like, son, you got something. And so I was already kind of driven. You know, my brother was the quote-unquote better basketball player in our family at the time. And so I kind of always had that need to want to prove that I was, like, a big deal and that I could play. And so for me, that's all it was about, just showing people I could play.
One thing, that 2-year run where you guys went to the national championship again the next year, I always like to point this out to people because I don't know that a lot of people really think about this, but I think about the coaches of the teams that you guys beat. You mentioned John Thompson earlier, national champion at Georgetown. W. Smith in the Sweet 16 won a national championship a few years later at Kentucky. Steve Fisher won a national championship at Michigan. Lute Olson won a national championship at Arizona. Mike Krzyzewski won a national championship, won several at Duke, and that's just in 94. You move forward to 95, Jim Boeheim won national championship at Syracuse. You played Dean Smith, North Carolina national champion coach. That was an incredible run that you guys went on, not just to win the games, but the talent and the coaching on the other side of the teams that you beat.
Well, I mean, we definitely beat you know, some of the most historical coaches in the game. And I think for me, like, that's one of the reasons why I can't lower my expectations, because that's kind of what I expect. Like, regardless of, like I said, who's sitting in that seat, my expectations are for us to be hoisting one up. I would like to be hoisting one up while I'm still here. I mean, that's kind of like, for me, it's like when we start playing and I hear fans, I'm always laughing. I see Twitter and everybody, we're going to win the championship. So, first Razorback football game, well, the first one I went to this year, Notre Dame. I think that was on the back end of us playing Louisville, if I'm not mistaken. Can't remember. I think so. But so I walk in the game and I see these fans and they're like, man, those guys look like y'all did when you played. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that makes me feel good. Like, at least I know we had a good team, but they just played an exhibition game, you know. Like, I think it was Cincinnati exhibition. I said Louisville, but it was Cincinnati. I'm like, that was an exhibition game. You're basing an exhibition game off winning a national championship. There's no comparison. But that's where our fans are, and they've gotten used to it. And so I think there's just a certain level of expectation that goes with that.
Scotty, I could sit here and talk to you about this stuff all day, but we're out of time. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, man. I enjoyed it.
Scotty Thurman, everybody.